Hello there and welcome to another episode of Marketing Room 101. I'm Ben Norman, Strategy Director at Principles in Leeds, and this is the podcast where I invite marketers for a good old rant and give them the chance to banish one thing from the industry forever. I'm really excited to share this episode with you because I always wanted to attract as much variety as possible, in every possible sense, in the guests I interview in Marketing Room 101. In particular, I was keen to attract guests who have a view on marketing and make marketing decisions without it being their day job. The business owners, entrepreneurs, CEOs who aren't stuck in the muddy puddle of modern marketing. And that's exactly who I'm talking to today. Owen Enser, the CEO of Meatly, which is the first company in Europe to be approved to sell cultivated meat, or lab-grown meat, as some of you may know it, and the first in the world to be approved to make pet food with it. Owen and I first met when Principles were working on the creation of the Meatly brand. And what first struck me is the sheer pace that he and his team work at. It's something I've always loved about working with entrepreneurial businesses, owner-managed businesses. Owen and the team are not bogged down in the admin, the hierarchies, internal structural sludge and approval pyramids. They're a small group of people ruthlessly focused on something, which, unlike most of the self-proclaimed purpose-led brands, could actually change the world. So here's my conversation with Owen Enser. Owen, welcome to Marketing Room 101.
Thrilled to be here. Thank you very much, Ben.
No, it's my pleasure. I understand you turned down Stephen Bartlett to be here instead today, so sorry about that, Stephen.
Several times, he just keeps trying to get me, but...
Yeah, and you're always too busy, right?
It's fine. Exactly.
Thank you for joining me in Marketing Room 101. To help our listeners just picture the scene, could you please describe what it's like in here?
My Marketing Room 101, I don't know if you've ever seen the film Ready Player One. It's like a fictional gaming, basically they're in a gaming AI world, and there's these like evil marketing executives, and they have these pop-up adverts that come like around the vision. So you're in these AI goggles, and there's just all of these like adverts around you. And they're like, we can fit in at least 30% more adverts without causing people to have a fit. And they just fill it all with these like flashing signs of buy this now, this is discounted. And so in my room 101, I'm just envisaging being bombarded with these different signs and barely being able to see for marketing. So that's what I'm envisaging.
I'm kind of relieved I've not watched Ready Player One. And if
it's
I wasn't, I'd watch it, I think. Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sold. Right. I'm going to look it up.
Iconic Steven Spielberg film.
Okay, fine. But it also makes for a perfect nightmare.
It does.
Okay, so obviously I'm pretty familiar with your business, as we did work together on the creation of the brand that surrounds it. So we worked on the creation of the Meatly brand. But before we get into banishing something from the marketing world, can you please just explain what Meatly is, and I guess how this small business in London that's only 4 years old has a fraction of the investment that other businesses in this space have, became the first in Europe to gain regulatory approval to sell cultivated meat. What is it about your business? What is it about Meatly that managed to beat everybody to that?
So Meatly, we are creating cultivated meat initially for pet food. Cultivated meat, for those who aren't familiar, is also known as lab-grown meat. And what we do is we take a single sample of cells from one egg, one time, and from that we can create an infinite amount of meat forevermore. And we do that by taking those cells, putting it in a large vessel, similar to how you make yogurt or beer. And then we provide all of the highest quality nutrients that are needed. And then you leave it in there for about 7 days. And you end up with healthy, sustainable, kinder way of creating meat. So we don't use any antibiotics. We don't kill any animals. Uses dramatically less land and less water. So it is a safe, healthy, delicious, sustainable, kind way of creating meat. And yeah, I've been working on that for the last 3 years now. It's like 2.5 years since we started kind of focusing on the R&D and pushing that forward. And I think there's a few ingredients to our current success and our success so far. We have been very, very focused. And there's a lot of things we don't do. And we talk about those as much of like, what else can we not do? So we can just focus on what we really do need to do. I have an amazing technical co-founder, Helder Cruz, who has about 30 years experience in the industry or adjacent industries and is leading a lot of that technical progress. But I think he's also a very entrepreneurial scientist who really gets the commercial side of it. And that has really helped us kind of leapfrog a lot of the other technical issues that other companies have faced. And I think increasingly, we don't really focus on what other people are doing. We just focus on what we're doing. We know what we need to do. We know how we're going to do it. And we just need to kind of keep delivering on that. And so I think it's like a relentless focus on delivering.
I think when I was working with you and I came and spent a bit of time with you and the team, the word you just used there, focus, is the word that if I took one word away from that whole process, it was definitely that. You're not distracted by anything other than that very, very specific mission that you've got in your sights. And like you say, we're not interested in the human market to start with. We're interested in progressing so that cultivated meat can be on shelves and for sale in the UK. And if the quickest way to do that is by producing it for the pet food market, then that's what we're going to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the pet food market's an incredible market in its own right as well. It's a great avenue for us as well to be able to commercialize in before going into human food. And yeah, like we don't have any time to waste. And, you know, we all just have a very clear vision. And I think the team is very aligned behind that, which makes it a very exciting, fun, passionate place to work.
And for listeners like me who aren't experts in this field, what does regulatory approval to sell cultivated meat mean in the real world? What does that mean to cat and dog owners now?
Hypothetically, we can sell products in the UK and it can be in pet food. And for you as a consumer, it will look like your existing pet food. It will taste like your existing pet food. It'll have the nutritional value of your existing pet food, but it'll be more sustainable, more healthy, safer than traditional meat. So that's the kind of big difference. And that regulatory approval, I say hypothetically, because we're still producing at very small volumes today. And we will do an initial product release in the next couple of months, but we need to start scaling up our production. And that mainly looks like getting bigger vessels to put the cells in. I mentioned those vessels, kind of like, yeah, beer and yogurt. And so at scale, this will look like a micro brewery. And today it looks more like a high-end chemistry experiment. And so that's where we need to move to, basically, as fast as possible. And that's what we're doing. We're making great progress on doing that.
So taking timescales out of this, almost, if you think about the fact that, yes, it will take some time, but if we allow ourselves time, maybe 10, 20 years, if cultivated meat isn't in most cat and dog bowls, why do you think that might be?
I think there's two potential reasons. One is the processes, as I've described it, is very straightforward, but we're talking about microscopic cells here. And on a microscopic level, this is very, very complex. A lot of the technology and the processes are incredibly expensive. And so what we have focused on the last few years is how do you bring this cost down as fast as possible? We've made incredible strides doing that, but there is still more work to be done. And so I think the cost will be one aspect. And the other is consumer acceptance, whether consumers will purchase this. A lot of the research is very positive. A lot of people I speak to are uncertain initially, completely understandable. And they're just like, well, what is it? What does it look like? Why would I buy it? You know, no one's ever really spoken to them about it. And so that's what we're starting to do, is just have this conversation with people in the pet industry, with vets, with pet owners and pet parents and everyone else. And so just explaining to them why we're so excited about it and why I want to feed this to my cats. Because as I've said, right, it's more sustainable, much kinder, but it's also healthier. We're not using any steroids, hormones or antibiotics. There's no contamination. So there'll never be any E. coli or salmonella or these other things that often get into traditional supply chains. And so I think it's about explaining that to consumers as well. But I think those are the two hurdles that we need to overcome.
And I suppose the last thing I wanted to ask before we get into you banishing something from the world forever, how does a Bain management consultant end up founding a cultivated meat startup? I'm sure that's a question you must have been asked before.
I've never been asked that before, actually, which is a great question. Right. A few things. One is, I think consulting can be great. You can learn a lot. You try a lot of different things out quite quickly. You get a kind of core understanding of what makes a business work or not, how to analyze things very quickly. You get to see different industries. Then I think it's really important to leave consulting. Do something else. A lot of people just stay doing consulting forever. And I kept trying different things. So I worked in a social enterprise. I worked in government consulting. I ran different startups. I advised companies on their food strategy. So I've done a lot of different things in the last, what is it now, 10 or 15 years. And yeah, a lot of that was just about really honing and iterating what it was I was excited about. What was I personally incredibly passionate about? What was it I thought I was uniquely able to do or uniquely excited to work on in terms of the type of work I was doing? And so, yeah, about 3 or 4 years ago, I just came to, I want to be the CEO or the COO of a alt protein startup that's going to be super early stage and based in the UK. And it's happened, which is great. So I think it's just about testing and iterating and continuing to ask the question of like, what is it that you're most excited to do?
Yeah, I really like that. I like to hear stories where anybody has really taken a step back and thought about what they want from their career, what they want in life. Or when someone's taken a step back and thought, you know what, I can make a load of money doing this for other businesses. I can feed that machine. But actually, can I take my skills somewhere else and make a real change in the world? I think when you talk about when we were working together, the stat that really struck me is 20% of all meat is fed to animals, right?
Yeah.
So you can make a difference.
Yeah.
Yes. So if 20% of all our meat is fed to pets, that's a tangible difference you can make, even if this never extends beyond pets, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a crazy amount. And I think you're right. It's finding what drives you. And for me, that was always more than just money. And so what drives me is there's about 200 million animals a day die to feed humans and pets. And I think we're better than that. I think, yeah, we can use our land and our water more efficiently than that. And we just don't need to be causing that much harm to other animals. So that's what I get excited about. Whenever I lose sight of that, I end up getting more stressed and anxious. And then I just need to come back to the facts of like, no, what we're trying to do here is break that chain, or at least have a chip away at that and show that there's another way of doing this.
This podcast is not sponsored by Principles Agency. If it was, I would probably have enough spare time to maintain relationships with friends and family. But as it's where I work and they give me and everyone else a free day off every week, which I spend doing this, I feel obliged to give it a plug. At Principles, we're obsessed with the word unforgettable, meaning we help everyday brands come to mind quicker and stay there longer. We do this using a set of principles the team and I developed. This means making brands distinctive, entertaining, visible, and consistent. If you'd like to chat about how we can help you or learn more about the principles of unforgettable brands, just pop me, Ben Norman, or Principles Agency a message on LinkedIn, or head to principlesagency.co.uk.
So you're here today because you would like to banish something from the marketing world. Can I ask Owen what you would like to banish, please?
I am banishing, gleefully banishing, what I like to describe as animal kind washing, which is
right.
Brand names such as the Laughing Cow, the Jolly Hog, the Happy Egg Company, and these other ones that try to portray animals as being joyful, happy things, when actually we know, for example, in the UK, 80% of meat is from factory farms, and those are not happy, joyful, laughing places. They are incredibly horrible places. So yeah, I think there should actually be laws against us labeling falsely, and I would like to banish them all forever, never to return.
Okay, so let's start to unpick what you'd like to banish a little. So it's this pretense that there is anything happy about these animals. Where do you think the line perhaps gets drawn in this? Because arguably any process of selling animal products leads to an animal being unhappy, an animal suffering.
Yeah.
So is it a case of just the language that frustrates you? Mm. Is it the look and feel? Is it packaging? Should it be regulated? How would we define this?
Send it all in.
Yes.
Definitely the wording. I mean, it's difficult, right? Because you have to get into the mind of the animal. The wording, yes, is very egregious. And then if you think, I'm now thinking about the Laughing Cow, or you have this cow looking very, I think that is also false and incorrect. And then, yeah, the other is when you have meat products that have like the rolling green hills, right? It's trying to portray that that meat somehow came from that condition, which is not very likely to be the case, which is probably more nuanced. But I think certainly the misrepresentation of happy looking animals words, you know, if they wanted to call it the unhappy cow, that would be fine. But calling it the Laughing Cow, I take issue with.
You use the word nuance there. I think there's a very interesting nuance in the difference between the more subtle portrayal of a happy environment. Mm. Like you say, rolling hills, blue skies, space, all of these things that we like to imagine that the animals that we consume or the animal products we consume come from animals that are in that environment. I think that's a much more subtle issue, isn't it? Than
more sinister.
Almost more sinister, because we are, like you say, we're suggesting that is the environment that those animals are growing up in, when I guess the reality is a lot of the animals would never see a green field or a blue sky.
And some do. I mean, it's also unfair to those people and those farmers and those companies who are trying to do it in the kindest way possible. And so, at least on the environment that they're being raised in, it would allow companies and people who are doing it properly to actually benefit from doing it properly and not just be subsumed into the mass marketing of false animal washing.
How do you think we could get these businesses to operate in that way? So let's say that actually, yes, you can't call it Jolly Hog, you can't call it Happy Cow. What do you think needs to happen beyond that? Beyond saying, actually, we're no longer allowed to consume animals and animal products, which I imagine would be your dream. Within a marketing sense, what do you think we need to do in a realistic world?
Realistically, I think what needs to happen, so a lot of it comes down to price, as ever, in marketing. And so the reason we use more industrial methods of farming is because that's the most financially efficient way of farming. And we all care about price. And so the only way really is to have an increase in price and an increase in the quality of condition that those animals are kept in. And no one wants to pay more and no one is willing to pay more. Yeah. So then the only real option is to reduce our meat consumption, have less meat that is of higher quality. And there is actually study and research to show that that would have higher nutritional value as well. So you wouldn't be sacrificing the nutrients, and supplement that shortfall with plant-based options, whether that be processed plant-based or just meat-free meals. So yeah, delicious meals made with plants. I think that is what really needs to happen. And so from a marketing perspective, you need to get people to shift away from, and it's so ingrained in our way of being, of just like meat means you're doing well and everything's fine, and you know, bring home the bacon and winner winner chicken dinner, like all of these things that are so culturally ingrained of like it's good. But do you really need a bacon buddy in the morning, a ham sandwich at lunchtime, and a chicken curry in the evening? Or is there some room there for us to still have an incredibly healthy diet, to still have foods that we love and enjoy, and to create a safer, kinder environment for animals, and creating a more sustainable planet? And that's where I think we really need to move to in the short to medium term. And that's what I would like to see. So it's how do you get that marketing vision across? Yeah.
Well, this is never going to be driven by those businesses, is it? It has to come through some form of regulation, which whether that's regulation around messaging or regulation around farming standards, those two things, I suppose, come together. And then it does lead to the premiumization of animal products.
Yeah. And I think it, as ever, is a combination of things, right? It's some regulation. A lot of farmers also want to be producing higher welfare products. It's consumer education. It's going to be concern around health. You know, like, do we need to be using 80 to 90% of antibiotics globally in our animal food chain?
Yeah.
Right. And all the issues that comes with. Yeah. I think in the UK, the average salmon will consume more antibiotics than you do in its lifetime. A lot of those are really icky facts that we try and kind of ignore, but I think are only going to become more and more obvious and glaring. And so it's those numerous impacts on a consumer that allow them to start understanding and moving towards other behaviors and other products without saying you have to give it up or you have to do this or you have to do that. It's just like, can we understand the systems more and what we actually need and want versus these just very straightforward behaviors?
I think when I first came to see you at Meatly HQ and you ran through essentially the manifesto for cultivated meat with us, for your vision, there was one killer slide in there that really just put the issue into numbers. And I could not believe the issue around antibiotics in the food chain. I couldn't believe the issue around water usage in the food chain. I couldn't believe the sheer numbers of animals that are used, slaughtered every day across the globe. But it's much bigger, isn't it, than just CO2 emissions. It's much bigger than just the ethics of this. The numbers are almost hard to quantify, aren't they? If anything, too hard to quantify, and that's the issue.
Yeah, it is really huge, because what we see is just chicken in the supermarket aisle. What you don't see is all of the process that's taken, right? So there's probably soya from Brazil, fish meal that's taken from the oceans around Peru, that's shipped to an animal feed manufacturer, potentially somewhere in Europe, that's processed, and then it's fed to a chicken that goes through a slaughter process and then is prepared and put in the shelf. And that takes up 4,000 liters of water to create 1 kilogram of chicken. It's just grossly inefficient. It takes about 9 square meters to create 1 kg of chicken. And we're going to be able to do that far more efficiently. So 90% less water, 80% less land, 40% fewer CO2 emissions. We don't use any antibiotics, steroids, or hormones in our process. So it's just dramatically more efficient process.
So whilst I am not personally a vegan, I do try and be more conscious about what I eat. When I came and worked with you, I actually ate for my first ever Impossible Burger, which was a bit of a game changer. But I am convinced by your argument to banish What are we going to call this? We're going to, you refer to it as animal welfare washing.
Is it welfare washing? Yeah, maybe that's better.
Animal kind washing. Let's call it animal kind washing. So we are going to banish animal kind washing. You have convinced me on that. And we're going to banish it in two senses. One, direct false claims about the happiness of animals. And number two, the more subtle portrayal of the conditions that those animals exist in. So the blue skies and the green fields, if those animals don't have access to blue skies and green fields. How do you feel that that's now banished from the marketing world?
Great. Very happy. And I hope it helps those who are trying to do more production in the kindest ways. And I hope it helps consumers understand what's actually happening in their food chain. One of the things is, like, when you buy something, that is creating demand, and you are demanding that something is made in that way. There's always this thing of, you know, who am I? And it's only one thing, and it's only one purchase. But that is how all change is made, is by people realizing the impact they can have. And the vested powers want you to feel like you're only one person, and that you don't have any choice, and that it doesn't really matter. But actually, you do. And so, yeah, how do you use your demand and what you are demanding?
We've all heard the phrase, haven't we? Well, it's already dead.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, we don't need to go into why that's not a logical argument, but yeah, you're right. We're always looking for an excuse, aren't we, to alleviate ourselves of the guilt or the need to change.
And yeah.
You mentioned earlier, there are a lot of different things at play here, but all of those things need to happen. Yes, we need to speed up the process for cultivated meat. We need to look at the messaging around meat. We need to look at the conditions and the welfare throughout that system. But all of these things need to happen, all as important as each other, aren't they? It's not a case that cultivated meat comes along in a few years and everybody gives up eating steak. Right.
Yeah, it's going to be gradual, and yeah, you're going to need a lot of these conditions to come together, basically. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so you're going to leave animal kind washing in Marketing Room 101. While you're here, is there anything else that you would like to take with you? Anything that you'd like to take back into the world?
I would like to take back those very old school adverts that are somehow very lovable about what kind of person you are if you buy this thing, you know?
Right.
And I can't think of any specific adverts, but it's very much like, if you buy this product, then you must be the kind of discerning person who likes to go here for dinner and does this other thing and does this other thing. And now I get a bit fed up where it's like, I'm not going to buy a razor because Messi is shaving with it. Like, I don't care about Messi very much, to be honest. And, you know, I'm not going to like drink that drink because you got some other celebrity that I don't really know to do it. Yeah, I just quite like that quaint, very old school type of advertising that kind of exists in some 1960s parallel universe.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an example here where there isn't a celebrity involved, but from those old 60s, 70s, 80s ads that were maybe a bit more, I say more honest. Honest might be the wrong word, but more directly speaking to that person.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It reminds me a little bit of the remade Old Spice ads, where it's like, smell like a man.
Yeah, maybe that's a bro-y version of that, but yeah, exactly.
What sort of ads are we thinking? Are we thinking here this is the sort of ads that usually link back to success, usually aspiration, those honest aspirational ads where you would see someone getting out of their BMW and they've take their shades off and they're going into a business meeting because that's the kind of guy they are.
The thing is, the simplicity of the voiceover as well would be, because the voiceover would literally be like, you park up outside your business meeting because you're the kind of guy who drives a BMW to your work. So yeah, that's what I'm going to go for.
I'm going to try and find some examples after this. We'll take it offline and let's try and put a nail in what these sorts of ads are. And then we'll maybe in the future, we'll try and create a Meatly ad.
Sounds great.
So what we're saying is we're not going to get Kim Kardashian to be the face of Meatly for its launch.
No. Beyond Meat did actually try that, but it didn't go down very well.
Pepsi was slated a few years ago, I think, for that ad where one of the Kardashians steps out of the line on the protest and gives the can to the cop.
It's like, we all solve race relations just for Diet Pepsi.
So brands overstepping the mark as well is maybe something that I've got a bit of an issue with.
Play it safe, go with the 1960s.
Okay, so we're going to let you take back. I'm going to describe it as a more honest approach to advertising.
Mm.
Do you think that sounds like an accurate way of describing this?
I think it's maybe a simpler and more direct way. Honest or not is up to you.
Yes, okay. I would say, because I'm an advertising guy, I'll pass it off as honest. So you may not know this, but there is one super fan of Marketing Room 101. And
it might have many more.
Yes, yeah, there could be tens of these. And he also happens to be my brother. I think his love for the podcast is unrelated to that. But he sends me a question every week to ask a guest, and he's not in our industry, so this might come as a shot from nowhere. So he wanted to ask you, Owen, I've seen that some companies have cultivated cells from extinct animals like woolly mammoths. So it seems it's possible to bring things back from the dead. If you could use this technology to cultivate one person from the dead, who would it be?
Wow. I would be very hesitant about doing that because, currently we can create cells. We can't create entire beings. So, yeah, I think it would end up like some sort of nightmarish scenario. Who would I bring back from the dead? I would bring back Freddie Mercury, and I would recreate the Queen set in Wembley. And that's
amazing.
That's what I would do. Yeah.
So 1985 with all the beer cups on top of the piano.
Strutting around with his
microphone on a station.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we'd have to use the new Wembley probably, but yeah, that's what I'd go for.
Amazing. I love that. So you are going to leave with us animal kind washing in Marketing Room 101. That's banished. You're going to take out with you a more direct approach to advertising, reminiscent of 1960s ads. How do you feel now you've made that swap?
I feel lighter, freer, happier. Yeah, it's great. Very happy with my decisions.
Oh, and if people want to find out more about you, if people want to find out more about Meatly, if they want to get in touch and tell you how much they appreciate you coming on and talking about this, how are people best off going about doing so?
You go to our website, meatly.pet, meatly.pet, or you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm very responsive on both. And yeah, look forward to bringing Meatly to market very soon.
So Owen, all that's left to do is thank you for coming in. Thank you very much.
It's been great. Honored to be here. And yeah, thank you very much.
So that was my conversation in Marketing Room 101 with Owen Enser. If you enjoyed it, could you please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts? Because doing so tells Spotify, Apple, etc. to introduce more people to the show, which in turn makes me feel a little bit better about making it, if not any less tired. This podcast is not sponsored by Principals Agency. If it was, I would probably have enough spare time to maintain relationships with friends and family. But as it's where I work and they give me and everyone else a free day off every week which I spend doing this, I feel obliged to give it a plug. At Principals, we're obsessed with the word unforgettable, meaning we help everyday brands come to mind quicker and stay there longer. We do this using a set of principles the team and I developed. This means making brands distinctive, entertaining, visible and consistent. If you'd like to chat about how we can help you or learn more about the principles of unforgettable brands, just pop me, Ben Norman, or Principals Agency a message on LinkedIn or head to principalsagency.co.uk.